Okay, good.
Al Dyson.
Yes, Al Dyson just joined.
Hey.
Hey, Dan.
How you
Al,
doing?
How are you? Good, good. We just started recording this session. This is a wrap-up session. It's the last one of this series, but we're going to be starting a new one in October. And I thought what we could do today is kind of go through those steps and what we're going to be talking about in the next session. And, of course, the most important thing for everyone that's starting is, do we really want to start a program? I mean, this is really hard work. We're entering a period of high unemployment. There's not a lot of business out there. And I think a very logical question is whether we want to start a program. Now, this is a very popular program in terms of trying to get jobs for people. People want these types of programs, but they are very difficult. And the target groups that we're working with in the environmental job training programs are people who traditionally have a tough time getting a job. They are very capable. They're very willing, interested in learning. They haven't had a chance or things may not have worked for them. So it's a great opportunity for them, and it's a great target group to work with. But we do have to ask this question, are we, you know, do we really want to do this? And some of the questions you might want to ask yourself as you go forward is there an existing program in our community that we can link this to? For example, is there someone, do we have a program? And as Molly had said, they have a program. They've got a community college program that was teaching one OSHA course. And if it's okay with you, Millie, I'm going to kind of use you a little bit as an example.
That's fun.
You've been teaching OSHA. So you've got an existing program that you could kind of latch onto. It's not as if you're sitting out there in an office and you say, I want to start a job training program. And I know
correct.
No one.
We actually have three. Now we have three folks that are certified to teach OSHA 10-hour and 40-hour or whatever the two basic construction and industry basic OSHA classes are.
So you have an existing program, and the next question we might ask is, do we have an infrastructure in place? For example, do we have a training center somewhere? If we don't,
Yes. Can
we find one? You know, do we have
right.
do we have some structure already? Can we identify a project leader, for example? Is there someone that is really interested in moving something like this forward? If there isn't, someone's got to be appointed or nominated or someone, there's going to have to be someone who's going to lead this thing through the path it's going to take.
Right.
And they have to give it a home. So the home, even though it may not be funded now, is them, basically. Their office is the home, and they have to they're the ones that people are going to go to. Now, this program takes a while to assimilate, and so it has to be a long-term commitment. So someone has to say, we want to do this program, but they have to understand your sponsors or benefactors or deans or whoever is going to support you, or politicians or mayor says, I do want to develop a job training program. The first thing you've got to tell them is, now you're going to have to be patient, because this is going to take a while. We just can't start up a fund. We just can't start one unless you want to give me $200,000 or $300,000, then I could start one tomorrow. But if you can't, then this is going to take a while. And we'll talk about why it will. You've got to think about things like, how can I leverage, if I do get funding, how can I leverage it? Now, you've got a school. There's a lot of you've got facilities. There's a lot of ways of leveraging. People think of leveraging as people throwing in money, but it's not necessarily just throwing in money. It's things like, well, we'll give you some instructors, or we've got some facilities, or you could use our campus two nights a week, or we'll send you some guest lecturers, or we could give you some equipment, or we'll lend you some equipment. All of those things are, we call leveraging. So you have to think about the fact are there people in your community that could throw things into the pot, not necessarily money. Although one of the other things you're going to have to think about is is there a potential here for some sort of future funding? If I get this program off the ground and I get this thing rolling, is there a possibility I can get the legislature and I get these politicians into this program and at my graduation classes, is there a possibility that someone is going to find some funds for me in the future? And these are all questions you want to ask real early on before we even get started. And if most of the answers are yes to these questions, you've got a shot at it. And you may not be able to answer yes to all the questions because maybe you'll have to find partners. And when you can't answer yes to a question, the answer lies in partnering with someone who can provide those things. So, for example, if you don't have a facility, you may find a community college in your community that you could go to, and they would say, yeah, we would love to do this, but we have never had the time to do the proposal, or we have never had the luxury of or energy to do this, or we don't have the knowledge to do this. And I'll get to that in a second. You don't really need a lot of technical knowledge to get one of these programs off the ground. You need a lot of energy and a lot of people skills and coordinating skills. You'll be able to find the technical people. You'll be surprised that of the 10 steps that we use to develop a sustainable program, of 10 steps, only one has to do with technical training. The other 10 have nothing to do with technical training. They have to do with things like life skills training, recruitment, placement, partnering, going to public meetings, tracking your students, working with your students, working out problems. All of those things I just mentioned have nothing to do with environmental technology. The interesting thing is the environmental technology piece is usually it's either farmed out or the community college does it or you'll have instructors that'll do it. So I would say out of 100%, 20% of that might be the actual technical training, and then there's 80% of all this other stuff that goes around in coordinating, setting up employers, bringing employers into the classroom to get them bonding with your program, to have hospitality nights, to talk in front of public forums. If there is a brownfield community and they're having a public hearing, to get on the agenda. A lot of the very successful programs are really into the mayor's office and the politics of the community, where they're in there working with Department of Economic Development and the Department of Environmental Resources. So they're really out there as ambassadors, and that would be your role, those on these calls, in terms of, I don't have to be an engineer, I don't have to even know that much about environment, but I do have to be someone who can do planning and coordinating and bring people together and making this group. So this very first step is, do I really want to start a program? And the answer might be yes, maybe no. And if it's maybe yes, and I'd say let's go through more calls and let's, as you go on and get into these steps, find out if this is too much for you at this point in time. It's not, you can't get the resources or you can't bring it together, and that's fine. And a lot of what this is all about is determining whether you want to move forward or whether you don't. And it's a good time as you go through these steps to see if you really like this or not. We're not talking about developing a massive Department of Labor training program. The nice thing about this is it's located in Environmental Protection Agency. It is, while they're very much interested in numbers, and what EPA will say is we want numbers, and that is true. The objective of this is to get jobs for people, but it's not a massive jobs program. It's not a highly funded program where there are thousands of people going together. There are many job training programs, each training in a very specific area. And the reason it's in EPA, it's a very specific training, and it requires, you know, we're talking about HAZWOPER and confined space and radon and lead and asbestos. They are not massive. They're not generic training programs. They're very specific, and they need a lot of attention that puts it in Department of Environmental Protection Agency, but they're only, we're talking about classes that might be 10 to 20 people per cycle. We're not talking about running 1,000 people through a program. So in a sense, it's nice because it's manageable. You're working more one-on-one than one on 100 or one on 50. You're not moving massive numbers of people around, but you are 10 to 20 per cycle. Well, if for 20 or 30 programs around the country in each cycle, we're doing 400 or 500 people per cycle at a time nationally. So we are, we're generating numbers, but each particular program is small rather than very large. And that makes it nice because it makes it much more manageable. And so this is the kind of program, when we talk about one of these environmental job training programs, we're talking about small program, 10 to 20 people, 3-4 cycles a year, and a whole lot of hands-on life skills training, a whole lot of working, getting people from being unemployed or unemployable into really good jobs that will go on and change their life. So once we decide we're going to do a program, and one of the things we talk about in these PLCs, you're going to have to be doing a needs assessment. And in the next few minutes, on the remainder of this call, I'll kind of go through what you need to do, and we'll be talking about it in more detail beginning in October. But once you decide, hey, I want to do this and I really like this idea, you've got to decide, is there really a need in your community? Now, it's obvious or intuitive that in Milley community there's a need. They've got all kinds of oil refineries. They've got confined space, lots of tanks, lots of industry. We have to do a needs assessment, though. Not all communities may be intuitively that in need of environmental jobs. Or the environmental jobs may not be the kind you think they are. In Florida, they might be horticultural workers that are working on the side of the road for the road department. They might be in Boston, they might be lead renovators because there's so much lead in old buildings. There may be things that have more to do with weatherization in a colder climate. So in different parts of the country, these environmental jobs may be kind of subdued or hidden. And the job of the needs assessment is to determine what kind of jobs you need in your community. And because you don't have a lot of heavy industry doesn't mean there's not a lot of environmental jobs. The new thing that's going to be coming up that we'll be talking about in the future will be wastewater operators and water operators. Water people are coming into the EPA job training program, and every community has water plants. And you may have a wastewater treatment plants in your community that need people, and you've got a small community, and they have no one training them. And you may be able to set something up with the municipalities that you'll be training the wastewater operators. So there's this whole area, when you get started, of needs assessment, where you're going to define in your community what kind of jobs your training program is going to be primarily training for. Not that you're going to be not training for other things, but you may be emphasizing certain areas. And part of that needs assessment is going to be you contacting local employers and finding out who are going to be your go-to people. You always have to think on these training programs. It's one thing to start the program. It's another to have a great training program. But unless you can place the people, it's of no value. And so the trick is to get your employers lined up before you even start your training program. It's going to be a slam dunk. Hopefully, your employers are going to be attending some of your classes, and they're going to be bonding with the students, and they're going to be looking at these students, and a lot of them will be hired before they even graduate. I mean, the employers will have their eye on certain candidates. They know that these are people that they'd like to hire, and they may even guide your training. They may even say, I'd like you to train these specific skills to these people, and if you do, I'll consider them for employment. So it's so important in those early stages of development of your program to link into your employers. Early on, of course, we'll be talking about what you're going to need in terms of letters of support from public figures, from employers primarily, from training partners, from facilities partners, people you're going to be leveraging with. So those are all things we're going to be doing in October and November when this RFP starts to come out. The things that take a long time, if there's ever a public hearing, you're not going to hold your own public hearing, but you'll want to get on the list of ask them if you could take 5 minutes to announce your intentions on getting some federal money to start a training program in your community. And you want to be able to do that so you could include it in your proposals, and you want to use it to market your program to make it a better program, even if you have one ongoing. So we'll be talking about getting into public hearings and doing these assessments. You're going to be organizing your leveraging resources. You're going to be contacting your employers and your public officials. So you'll be in these early stages. It has absolutely nothing in the early stages to do with the technology training. It's all going to be about planning, getting your ducks in a row, making friends, making new contacts, and thinking about where your students are going to be going. So all these things happen even before you start writing your proposal. And you can't fear that in the back of your mind is, well, what if I make all these contacts and I don't get the proposal, I don't get the funding? You don't worry about that, because if you don't get it the first year, you might get it the second. These are annual grants. And the other thing that might happen is you may get other money or latch on. If you don't get the federal money, you may get some state money or some city money. And if for some reason the grant falls through, they may say, well, you didn't get it, but we're going to keep funding you. We want to fund you to keep this thing going because we think it's a great idea. So you want to move full steam ahead, assuming that you're going to get this grant. And you're going to have to do things like lining up a fiscal agent, someone who's going to actually submit the grant. You're going to have to line up a recruitment process, people who will be doing your life skills training, people who will be doing your technical training, who's going to be doing your placement and tracking, and who's going to be doing your marketing. So there's a whole lot of these issues that you need to think about. You can do it in a disorganized way, or you could do it in a systematic way, and let's identify all these things that you have to do, and then you could start thinking about these things and who's going to be doing it, who's going to be assigned these jobs, and how you're going to delegate this responsibility. So that's kind of where we're going to be going in the next 10 sessions. It's kind of been where we went in the last 10 sessions, but we're going to be, again, looking at these things and how to get your program going over the next several months. And, you know, while we're going to start this thing in October, it's not too early, because as I describe these things, you might have said, I'm already overwhelmed. This is just too much. But if you take these things a little step at a time, you're going to find you're going to set yourself up a really nice running program. So did Molly, did you find yourself having to do all these things in the process of writing your first grant? Or
we did. We did. Our state counterpart to EPA is DEQ. They wrote a wonderful letter.
Mm-hmm.
The state director did, and we have had our partnerships. We went everything from a state government to our local emergency response coordinators in each county, to industry. So we did all that. That was our partnership letters.
Mm-hmm.
It just, as we talked earlier, I just want to get our comments, or what are they, our debrief. Is to see our debrief, to see what ball I dropped.
Right.
I wrote the grant, just where did we go wrong? What did we not address that they wanted to be addressed?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Go ahead.
What we'll do is find out whether you have to proactively ask for those or whether they'll automatically send them out. I think they will automatically send them out to you.
I'm driving them nuts. I asked. Ever since July, since the announcement came out,
mm-hmm.
and they thought they were going to have them out and distributed by the time we had our conference in Alexandria,
mm-hmm.
and they weren't, and actually talked
to Joe, maybe.
Talked to Joe and Kathleen at the same time, and they were going to get together, thought it should have been out, and still hadn't heard from them. But I have emailed frequently asking for them.
We'll
see.
We'll pass on that in our discussion. Questions have been arisen about the comments for those people who have applied and not received grants, and that we are interested in starting around and seeing what people may have not done completely. And
that'll work.
See what we need to do from there. So
that'll work. I appreciate it.
Anyone else have any questions or comments or anything that they want to address in this session or in future?
Hey, Mike, Al Dyson.
Yeah.
The workshop in Alexandria,
mm-hmm.
did they have any of that information in electronic form that you could send out? I know you probably had a workbook. I'm not asking you to make a lot of copies, but if anything is electronically that you can email, I appreciate it.
I'll get that. What we did do the last session, and hopefully everyone got one, it was a digital copy of all the contact numbers. What we felt would be useful is we took the addresses and email contacts of all the current grantees and anyone that may have someone nearby that had questions or wanted to contact everyone at that conference had an ongoing program or they were alumni of a successful program. If there is someone in near you and you'd like to get a hold of them, one of the things we tell all our grantees is be a mentor, and anyone if you can help someone, help them start their program. In fact, one of our grantees was so proud because he helped another grantee write their grant, part of their grant, and they received the grant. And he was very happy that he was able to contribute to the person who was writing this grant and was successful. And so the attitude that we try to give the existing grantees is if you can help someone who's going for a grant, help them. If they request to see a grant or whatever you can do, try to help them as much as you can. So what we did is sent everyone a contact list of the Alexandria conference where all the grantees were. I'll send you, Al, what I can of that conference. And we'll also, in the next round, we'll try to discuss a lot of those sessions that we did at the Alexandria conference. That's great. Well, one of the things we do promise, we're going to try to hold this to 30 minutes. So thank you guys for calling in. And while we will not have one in 2 weeks, we'll probably have one in about mid-October. So probably about the second week in October, I'll be sending out some notices about the beginning of the next round. And we'll just start over from scratch and start probably that first session. We'll be talking about what we need to do now in terms of getting this program together, getting your name on a list of the public hearings and getting this needs assessment going and getting your partnerships going. So till then, I'll send everyone some post-session notes and have a good couple of weeks. And thanks, Millie, for the story and the update on the Gulf Coast. I appreciate it.
And we'll keep you updated. We appreciate y'all's help. Y'all have a great week.
Okay.
Okay, thank
Bye-bye.
You.
See y'all.
Thank you.